I'm Rose Beiler, Associate Professor at the University of Central Florida, and you're listening to the Riches Documentary Podcast. Welcome to the Riches Documentary Podcast. Riches, the regional initiative for collecting the histories, experiences, and stories of Central Florida, is an umbrella program housing interdisciplinary public history projects that bring together different departments at the University of Central Florida with profit and nonprofit sectors of the community in order to promote the collection and preservation of the region's history. By facilitating research that records and presents the stories of communities, businesses, and institutions in Central Florida, Riches seeks to provide the region with a deeper sense of its heritage. This series will feature a podcast every 2 weeks, in the middle and at the end of each month, that will explore various aspects of Central Florida's history. In today's episode, Harry T. Moore, Civil Rights Pioneer of Central Florida, Part 1, Dr. Jim Clark and author Ben Green give a detailed background on the Moores. This episode will give audiences a better understanding of who Harry T. Moore was, how he became a major civil rights leader, and the movement for equality that he led in Central Florida.
On December 25, 1951, America's leading civil rights leader, Harry T. Moore, and his wife were murdered while sleeping in their home in Central Florida. Harry T. Moore, an active civil rights leader throughout the 1930s and 40s, set the precedent for civil rights activities throughout Florida. Moore organized voter registration drives, demanded equal pay for African American educators, and investigated lynchings throughout Florida. His leadership within the NAACP, coupled with civil rights activities, made the Moores prime targets for Klan terror and harassment. Till their death, the Moores fought for equal rights and representation for the African American community in Florida, sparking the major civil rights movement that would sweep the country years later. Our experts, Dr. Jim Clark and Ben Green, will give further information on the Moores and their legacy in Central Florida. For those who don't know you, please introduce yourself.
My name is Ben Green.
My name is Jim Clark. I am currently the publisher of Winter Park Magazine.
For our audience, please give us a background on Harry T. Moore.
He was born in the panhandle of Florida in a little town called Houston, outside of Live Oak in Suwannee County. He lived there with his mother and father till he was about 9 when his father died. Then it was really just Harry and his mother. She sent him, when he was probably 11 or so, she sent him to Jacksonville to live with his 3 aunts, which was a really important period of his life.
After the Moores' brutal murder in 1951, voter registration in Central Florida plummeted due to a fear of retribution from the Klan. The civil rights movement would not take form in Florida again until the 1960s, with leaders such as Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. heading the national movement. As time progressed, the Moores' story faded to the background, and their contribution to civil rights became a forgotten piece of the past. Many of the meticulous documents the Moores had and the information about their activities were lost to time until a resurgence of interest in the Moores occurred during the mid-1980s and 1990s. Dr. Jim Clark gives us his insight on reopening the Moore murder in the 1980s and 1990s during his time at the Orlando Sentinel.
Several years later, I got re-involved with Harry T. Moore and began asking some questions. The result was that the sheriff in Brevard County announced that he was reopening the case and launching a new investigation. I claimed that as a victory, thinking that my reporting had led to that. It was actually a ruse, because once you say you've reopened an investigation, all the public records are closed. So what he did was, in effect, stymie my request for his records from the 1940s and 50s. Instead, as part of this sham investigation that the sheriff launched, he said he was asking the FBI to send down its documents. The FBI sent down the documents, but there was no investigation. The documents ended up in the state attorney's office in Sanford, and the state attorney was not involved in this. And when I called him, he said, sure, come and look at them. What's amazing about the documents is that these are unique, and the FBI would love to have them back because they are raw FBI files. When you do an FBI request, they cross out the names. In these files, all the names are there. The names of the Klansmen, the names of the suspects, what they told interviewers, who the informants were, everything you could possibly want to know. And it painted a grim picture of Orange County, of the Apopka Klan, of the activities in Lake County. And this was an opening for researchers such as myself to really examine the Harry T. Moore murder.
After the reopening of the Moore's case, author Ben Green began researching the story of Harry T. Moore. Ben Green would later go on to write Before His Time, the biography of Harry T. Moore. Mr. Green describes his introduction to the Moores and his struggle to find sources on this forgotten civil rights leader.
I went to the library, obviously, and I started looking at old microfilm of the newspapers for the day of the bombing, and they described his papers blowing across the yard. Like, I remember in the Orlando Sentinel, the Miami Herald, and I thought, where are those papers? How do I get those papers? How do I find this stuff? And so I got in touch with his daughter, Evangeline, and I went to her house. She lives in Maryland, and she didn't really have much of anything. I am in big trouble trying to write a book where I've got no documents. The first break really was when I went to the Library of Congress. They have the NAACP archives at the Library of Congress, and I had been told there's not much there. There may be, 20 pages of stuff. I came home with 400 pages of Harry T. Moore stuff. And it was one of the most important lessons I ever learned in terms of doing research, which is assume nothing. Things were misfiled. There were things, documents in folders that made no sense that they would have been there. I realized I had to look everywhere because you just never knew. I mean, something might be filed in a file folder that said Florida or Madison County, and it turned out it was a letter from Harry T. Moore about a lynching. So that was the first leg of it, was getting stuff from the Library of Congress. Then eventually I got access to the FBI files, and then I did all these interviews with friends and relatives and people that he'd worked with, and so altogether I finally was able to piece it together.
How did Moore get involved with the NAACP?
In 1934, he was living in Brevard County. He was teaching school. He was an elementary school teacher and actually principal. A cousin of his wife got some NAACP pamphlets in the mail and was scared just to even have them in his possession. So he brought them to Harry T. Moore and showed them to him. And Harry T. Moore said, this is just what I've been waiting for. And so he started the first local branch of the NAACP.
Why do you think that Harry T. Moore's accomplishments aren't as well known nationally as other local civil rights leaders like James Meredith and Fred Shuttlesworth?
Well, he died before his time, to coin a phrase. I mean, it was 1951. There was no civil rights movement. There were not television cameras filming the dogs attacking children in Birmingham. There was no TV coverage of like there was for the bus boycott in Montgomery. It was a huge event when he got killed, but the fact that it never got solved and there was no civil rights movement that was organized around it, it just kind of got wiped out of history. I think that was some of it. Also, the fact that it happened in Florida, I think, had a lot to do with it. The state of Florida wanted this story to go away as quickly as possible because it was hurting tourism, it was hurting the citrus industry, and the story disappeared from newspapers in Florida much sooner than it disappeared from New York and other places around the country where they were doing rallies. And I think if he had been killed in Alabama or Mississippi, you expect that from Alabama and Mississippi. It's part of their legacy, whereas Florida tried to promote itself as vacation paradise, and so they did not want anybody to remember that story.
While the Moore's legacy is not as well known nationally today, their death had a major impact on Florida's history in the 1950s. The Moore's murder brought national attention to the rampant Klan violence in Florida and shed new light on the racism that was epidemic in Florida. As an expert in Florida history, Dr. Clark describes the power of the Klan and the impact the Moore's murder had on the African-American community.
I think one of the things that surprised me was coming to an understanding, really, of the role of the Klan. I had always assumed that the job of the Klan was to try to, if you will, drive out African Americans. The role of the Klan, especially in Orange County and in Lake County, was to keep blacks down. That generation of African Americans coming back from the war who didn't want to go pick oranges, who didn't want to work in the fields, who wanted something better. The Klan's role was to intimidate, to threaten, to harm, to keep these people picking oranges. Much of the violence of leading to the murder of Harry T. Moore simply involved picking oranges. And the efforts by law enforcement officials, such as Sheriff Willis McCall in Lake County, to keep a workforce in the fields picking oranges.
For many Americans, Florida represented a vacation paradise, immune from the harsh realities of racism in the 1940s. However, for the African-American communities in Florida, many faced the same bigotry and violence that was associated with states like Alabama and Mississippi. Dr. Clark describes the dichotomy between Florida's tourist image and the reality many Africans faced during the 1940s and 50s.
The historical image of Florida is one of hotels in Miami Beach or snowbirds coming down for vacations. And so much of the history of things like the Harry T. Moore case have simply been lost, that people don't realize what was happening, that we present a picture to the world of a sun and fun place, and much of our history is based on that. And so I think that we forget that Florida was part of the South and went through the same ordeal that the rest of the South went through. And so I think it's important to keep the memory of people like Harry T. Moore alive, whether it's rebuilding his home or naming a building after him or articles and books commemorating him, so that people know what happened in Florida, so that it doesn't get glossed over and people say, nope, that didn't happen here.
The incredible story of Harry and Harriet Moore still resonates with many Central Florida residents today. Both Dr. Clark and Ben Green give their opinion on the legacy of the Moores and how it fits into Central Florida's history.
I think it fits into Florida's history, not just Central Florida. I mean, I think that what he was doing was work that didn't actually get fulfilled for 20 years. But I mean, if you look at most valuable work, one was in education, that he filed the first lawsuit in the Deep South to equalize black and white teacher salaries. That was in 1934. It eventually came to fruition years later. Second was investigating lynchings. He investigated every lynching that happened in Florida from 1941 till his death. And then the third thing, what I mentioned earlier, was voter registration drives. The fact that he had over 100,000 African Americans in the state of Florida registered in the Democratic Party, which was by far the largest percentage of black voter registration of any state in the South. I mean, I think that was his lasting contribution, and I think that's the reason he was killed.
I think Moore was so very far ahead of his time. This is an amazing thing, I think, that he was 10, 20, 30 years ahead of the rest of the country. He was saying things beginning in the 1930s that Martin Luther King would be saying 20 years later and drawing national attention. He was challenging the system in an era where no one else was challenging the system. The court cases that led to Brown versus Board of Education, the ruling in 1954, mostly are post-war cases. Here you had Harry T. Moore in the 1930s making court challenges, something that no one else was doing, and certainly not an African American in the South. So I think that Harry T. Moore was unfortunately largely forgotten beacon for civil rights in this country.
Even decades after their untimely murder, the Moores' legacy is still a major part of the African-American community in Central Florida. Harry T. Moore was a pioneer for civil rights in America. His willingness to fight for his community, coupled with an unbreakable tenacity for equality, paved the way for other civil rights leaders. In an era of violence and terror towards African Americans, the Moores represented the hope for an equal future for African Americans. Their contribution to Central Florida will be a preserved piece of the community's history for decades to come.
Thank you for listening to the Riches Documentary Podcast. Feel free to contact us with any questions or comments on the program that you just heard. Please join us for the next episode, The Moore Complex, Preserving the Legacy of Harry T. Moore, Part 2.